Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Most of us have had one of those experiences. You travel to another city for training, you see a thought-provoking TED Talk online, you read a transformative book, and you wonder, how do I apply this inspiration, this change into my daily life? How do I encourage others in my family, in my community, to be part of that journey as well? The Mini Lusahan Okola Kichiapi ambassadors took a slightly different approach to addressing one of our most persistent problems, racism and racial disparity. They gathered a group of leaders. They traveled together for customized training at the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. They went through the experience individually and as one. Now they have returned home and they're working on the next step of the journey, and it's one that involves us all. We've gathered a few of them today in the SDPB Black Hills Bureau in Rapid City. With us we have Karen Mortimer, Bev Warren, Eric Dwyer, and Whitney Rencounter. Welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Lori.
I'm hoping that we can start with each of you one at a time and tell me something about the trip itself that really resonated with you. And Karen, let's start with you. Take us to Los Angeles and something about the time there that you know will be with you forever.
It's actually hard to find one or even two things that are primary, but the one of the things that was incredible to me was this remarkable group of people who said yes to the experience. And then when we came together, we met in November to kind of do some pre-work, and then the next time we were all together was at the airport on the 10th of January, and the connections, the relationships that started building that day around common concerns, common issues, and a chance to learn from one another was so powerful. And what I've heard and seen since is so hopeful to me in terms of Native American and non-Native leaders in our community who are ready to roll up their sleeves to learn both individually and collectively.
Hmm. Bev, how about for you? I know it's hard to pick one thing, but just highlight something that is among the many experiences that resonated.
As I like to identify myself, first of all, as a Lakota elder, so I've been on this earth for many years and experienced a lot. And sometimes I think I have read all the articles or books about such atrocities that happened during that time frame in Germany, but it was not renewed, but reminded by the displays that were shown. Mm-hmm. And each one was so impactful for you to stand there and listen to the person explaining how this display was created and what hopefully it would do for people to think deeper into their being so that it would not happen again. Hmm. And that was just one thing that I recall as I look back to those two long, emotionally draining days, but very, very worth it.
Hmm. Eric, your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Lori. A trip where you get to hang out with a Lakota elder many days is always going to be a blessing. So it was an honor to hang out with Bev. We had a day at the museum that was the Holocaust experience. And before, growing up, I knew about the Holocaust, but it was always ancient history and something that happened long ago. But in the afternoon, we had the honor of meeting Renee Firestone, a Holocaust survivor. And to meet that lady, 94-year-old lady, in person, and to hear her stories told from a clear mind of her experience in the concentration camp, her sister that was experimented on, her mother and father that were murdered, it brought everything that that evil hatred did in those days, it brought it into my day. And so the Holocaust experience is something that this happened in my day. This isn't ancient history. It was so powerful, and I was thankful to get to experience that.
Hmm. Whitney, your thoughts?
You know, I think for me, the question kind of comes into your mind, how do we get to a point where we as human beings treat other human beings this way? Not only in the Holocaust, but also here in America with my ancestors and with Wounded Knee, Dakota 38 plus 2. You know, these are reminders of things that happened if we do not work together and educate one another, spend time to get to know each other, developing relationships. Not only that, I think to be able to break these cycles that have been going on throughout human history for many years, and that still can continue if we do not take the time to learn how to facilitate with each other, to come to the table and utilize the conversations and utilize a way to not discuss things in conflict, but to be able to talk about things and to there's a term that one of the facilitators used there, which was do not let the pursuit of perfection get in the way of progress. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really important for us to understand, because if we try to get to one place to another in a matter of seconds, you know, it's going to be very difficult. You cannot pretend to not take the actual journey. So those are some great things that we've learned there, and we're very appreciative and excited.
You cannot pretend to take the actual journey.
Yes.
I'm writing that down. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
That's memorable to me. And Eric, you mentioned something about Bev, and I want to say when I was first in Rapid City through with SDPB the first time, Bev was kind enough to sit down with me for an afternoon. It's not on the radio. We didn't do any recording. And I felt the same way. I felt completely humbled and honored that she would spend that time with me. So, Bev Warren, it's such a privilege to have you here with us on the radio. And I'm wondering, Whitney said, you know, we need to learn how to have these conversations. We need to learn how to sit with each other and talk in ways that are not in conflict. I'm paraphrasing him. Hope I'm getting the spirit of what he was saying. And I wonder if you can expand on that and tell me, what do you think that we in South Dakota, we in this area, have to learn from each other now?
Well, in order to fully understand what the Lakota people feel today and think about is the history of what happened to our people here on this very land, and how the general population do not necessarily know or don't want to know, because it is painful. I saw a picture of the mass burials that were shown at the museum. And I was picturing in my mind at one point, because it looked very similar to the one mass burial that was done at Wounded Knee here in South Dakota to our ancestors. And I thought, well, that isn't necessarily acknowledged or admitted to in our American history. And that if we could do that as a country of people who care about our future generations and how we would like our world to be much better than it is, we need to look at history and know it, acknowledge it, validate it, and then move forward. I think in that process, groups of people will heal, because Lakota people still feel that pain. A certain grieving that has not gone away. So that would be my idea, is to learn history and move forward with a resolve to make a better life for all of us.
Eric Dwyer, when you were talking and you mentioned the 94-year-old Holocaust survivor, and you said, you know, her sister was experimented on, and I got one of those chills that you just, you know, you sort of shudder with the horror of that moment. It is painful. It is emotionally draining to stand in that space. Do you agree that being in that space, though, has value in order to grieve collectively and to move forward and do the work that needs to be done next collectively?
Yeah, because you have to see the whole picture. It didn't start off with the concentration camps.
Right.
Part of the Holocaust experience was the education that happened for us was seeing the journey of the hatred started with just words of mm-hmm. hatred. Just the seeds of words that were planted, not only in Germany. During that time on planet Earth, there was a worldwide seeds of hate that were sown everywhere against the Jewish people. They weren't wanted anywhere because of their different culture, because of their different nationality. And it started with words. It didn't start off with experimentations in dark, evil places. It started off with jokes around the coffee table and built to where Hitler was simply a good gardener who could take these seeds that were planted throughout not only Germany, but Europe, and even in the U.S., these seeds of hatred that were planted, Hitler was able to cultivate it to the level and degree that we horrifically got to experience as humans. And so that education was powerful to watch how something like the Holocaust is birthed. And you look around and you go, are there seeds of hate that are being sown in our day still? And then I work at Rapid City High School with young people. Yeah, I want to come back to Rapid City and say, I want to find those seeds of hate and pluck them off the ground,
yeah.
and don't allow them to be planted, because we could be here in any culture, in any time. We could be here again. And so you get that kind of calling after right. an experience like that.
Right. Karen, jump in here. We have to be better gardeners in some ways of, you know, what seeds get planted and what weeds get, you know, pulled out or managed. What are some of the first steps? I mean, it seems like this is, you know, a monumental step forward. But as you have these conversations after coming home, what are some of the steps that seem to come up again and again where people say, yes, that, we have to do that. We have to move into this direction.
Well, I don't think we have the answer at this point. I think what I will defer to Bev Warren, who talked about the fact that we need to acknowledge, validate, and respect the history, the history in the past and the history that's being created right now. And so a big part of that's going to be education and working toward acknowledging, validating, and respecting our community. Our next steps, there's individuals are going and already are have come home and are witnessing and acting in ways that are really profound. There's a quote that we saw at the museum, Simon Wiesenthal, who started the Museum of Tolerance, or is a focal leader, said, hope lives when people remember. And we won't have hope unless we remember. We can't just get over it. We can't pass over it. We need to remember that this land that we all live on was Native American land that was colonized, that the thing that just absolutely I cannot stop thinking about is the comparison between the Holocaust and the Indian Holocaust that we see here. Mm-hmm. Bev shared a research piece that was co-authored by her son and another person, and incredibly powerful in terms of comparing, looking at the Indian Holocaust, and the comparisons are remarkable. Mm-hmm. You know, the boarding schools, the adverse childhood experiences, the chronic disease disparities, it's stunning. And when we learn that, and when we remember, as I think Eric and Bev and Whitney all talked about, we might have hope to make some change. We don't have the answer now.
Whitney, we talked with a guest yesterday who had done extensive research on ordinary people during the Holocaust and different choices that they made. And when I introduced this group today, I talked about you being, you know, leaders of some sort, but you're also all, you know, ordinary people. And I'm wondering if you could address that, Whitney, of the sense of this being something that impacts all of us, whether, you know, whatever, native, non-native, in a leadership role, a student in a high school, a parent. Talk a little bit about the ordinary people and why this is significant for everyone.
Well, in our Lakota Dakota culture, we refer to ourselves as Ikchewi Chasha, or Ikchewi, common people. And I think that's a reminder to help us understand that we're no better, we're no less than the other person. And a lot of times we may have gifts, or we may have had support to get us in the positions that we are, whether it's leadership as a, you know, teacher, administrator, or a business person, so on and so forth. However, we still possess those traits as a common person. And I think when we can get down to that level and we're able to do away with those stereotypes, because one of the things we learned at the Holocaust Museum is that, kind of like what Officer Dwyer said, the Jewish people were portrayed in a cartoon character-like image, and they were portrayed to normal people. And the comparison kind of made you think about how possibly that Hitler's views are right, that the Jews, you know, had this portrayal of a cartoon with bigger noses and features that were not like average people back then, is what the mentality mm-hmm. was. And we compare that to United States and how Native Americans still to this day are portrayed in a lot of mascots with the same type of imagery. Mm-hmm. And I think when we can get down to the fact that we're all common, ordinary people, we then to start where we're able to look at each other not by the color of our skin, but instead the fact that we were all created by one creator. And then we're able to take those steps to say, why are we in the position? Why does racism exist? Why, you know, do the fact that so many Native Americans struggle with school, struggle with, you know, maintaining the positions of leadership in our country overall? And I think a lot of times we can then look at ways that we can make a difference in terms of education, in terms of support. And, you know, the bottom line, I think, is if we can view each other in that same plane as equals, we then are able to take a look at some of the horrific things that have happened in our history and do the work that's needed to do better. Mm-hmm. Because like Officer Dwyer said, if we don't, then those seeds of hate can rear up, and then we don't know where we could be headed next. So it's important to be educated, to be aware, and utilize your education to inform other people.
We need to take a quick break. I'm going to ask you all to just hold tight for a minute. We'll come back with more with this group of the Miniluzahana Kola Kichiapi ambassadors. Stay in the moment. Listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We have a panel of guests with us at SDPB's Black Hills Bureau today from representing many Luzahan Okola Kichiapi ambassadors. We've talked to these folks before about presentations on an inconvenient truth. You can find those at listen.sdpb.org. You can also follow MOA or Rapid City Circle of Friends, as they're also called, on Facebook. They have a site there to sort of follow along with the work that they're doing. And I want to come back and again, our guests, Karen Mortimer, Bev Warren, Eric Dwyer, Whitney Rencounter. Bev, let's start this segment of time with you. And I asked somebody once, we were talking about racial disparity in Rapid City, and I asked if they had hope for the future. And the gentleman I was interviewing said that's not the word that he would use. He didn't really like that word. So what I'm getting at is, you know, are you optimistic? Do you see progress? Do you have hope? What's the right way to ask that question or look at that as we look at moving things forward and hoping for change?
That's very interesting, the word hope, because I used it yesterday at our follow-up meeting from our trip to the Museum of Tolerance. And my response was that word. So this is another perspective. We don't always have the same perspective. We all have different life experiences to pull from, culturally, economically, the whole gamut of differences that we all have. I have hope for our future, for our children, for our grandchildren, and on, because I currently see in Rapid City a movement of trying to make change in this city that is actually nationally known by the native people of this country as racist city. That's the reputation that Rapid City has. And it's not easy to hear that, I know. Mm-hmm. But that's the reality, and that's the Lakota people's reality. So, of course, I have history of having endured discriminatory acts as a child going to school here in Rapid City in the 50s. However, today, as I am working in Rapid City and working with students and realizing as I work with community organizations that there is a move here to improve the reality of Rapid City from the historical realities. And I have hope for that. I will never go without hope, because I also am witnessing the students that I work with and how they want to improve their knowledge base in whatever field they're into. I happen to work at the College of Nursing, and I hear it daily from different students that I want to stay here and make a difference. I do not want my children to live through what I am today. And so I see that, I hear it. And these are people who are young and willing to do it and to not go away, because this is our home. Mm-hmm. Our ancestors are here. So my hope for this community and out from Rapid to South Dakota, to the region, to the United States and globally, we all need to think and make life better for all of us.
Karen, I want to bring you back into the conversation. You and I have spoken many times, and one of the things I always admire about you is how often you will say, we don't have the answers. You're very interested in the questions, as am I. And I'm wondering how you have learned to sort of sit in that space to realize there's no easy answer to this. There's not a checklist that we need to develop. There's not a... although there might be things that, you know, belong on a checklist, that's not the overall goal here. How do you sort of approach change and transformation and education and conversation and these really big issues and sort of have the patience and the insight and the wisdom to do so in the way that you personally do?
I humbly would say again that I really don't have the answer. and I say that because I think I've learned that I've thought I had the answer before,
right,
and I've learned that I don't. Mm-hmm. So what I have learned is that the answer is bringing people together. Collective, equal voices at the table are really critical. That's probably one of the most critical things that I've learned, and that listening is the one of the most valuable pieces of leading. I also know that I've had a couple of mentors who have helped me really learn this, mm-hmm. that change happens at the speed of trust. Mm-hmm. And the lack of trust between the Native and non-Native community is something we have to work on every single day, and change isn't, we need to work toward trust if we want change. And the other little byword that I've learned that I try to hang on to and learn from every single day is that you have to go slow to go fast. We aren't going to have answers immediately. We won't have it unless we work together equally and collaboratively. So again, I don't have an answer, but those are sort of touchstones that are really critical in my thinking. And it's really difficult. This is some of the hardest work I have ever done.
Really?
Yes.
Eric Dwyer, you're a school resource officer, right? Is that, do I understand your role in the school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So I have a daughter in high school, and when I think about life in high school, I think about speed and just how noisy and full it can be, how many things are sort of flying at these kids, from, you know, what they'll do next to, you know, relationships to education itself, to problems that they might, you know, encounter. As we're talking this conversation, it is all about spending the time to have these deeper conversations. When you bring this experience back to a high school setting and you look around, and you said earlier, you know, I want to find the seeds of this in my own, you know, sphere of influence and address them accordingly. How do you do that when everything is moving at this blur for these teenage Rapid City students?
Yeah, you know, I think a cool thing that's happening, I like to talk about some cool things. Here's a cool thing. Eric Bringswhite, grew up in Rapid, former gang member, was on the trip with me. And he has been inside of Rapid City High School reaching out to our kids too. On the trip, Eric and I got to hang out. We went one night, we went down to this burrito place inside of a gas station, and the burrito makers are from India. Mm-hmm. And so we're having these Indian burritos made with naan bread and this chicken, and I didn't even, Eric and I became these food buddies in LA going on these adventures, and it was so much fun. And I know people had to be staring at us because we just are so different. Mm-hmm. But different is cool. I've always been attracted to international things. And what's cool about Rapid City and South Dakota, we're international. We have 9 sovereign nations within our border. Man, I wish we could celebrate that more. Rapid City is surrounded by 3 sovereign nations. We're an international city just for that reason. Could we celebrate that more? I think the answers we're going to look for to make Rapid City a shining place in the Midwest, that's no longer, Bev, known as Racist City. But wouldn't it be cool if Rapid City could be known as this international place where Rosebud and Cheyenne River and Oglala, these nations, I don't even want to use the word reservations anymore. Why call them that archaic term? Call them what they are. They're sovereign nations. Could we celebrate that? And I think the answer might be that us coming together, multinational, multicultural, an advertisement to Rapid City, South Dakota, to anybody, we're already tourist, you know, overwhelmed in the summertime, but so the nations are already coming to our city. Wouldn't it be cool if Rapid City could be known as this place where any people group, any tribe, any nation is celebrated here? I think we could, and I think we have that potential.
Whitney, I want to ask you, and you know, if this isn't something you want to talk about, just change the subject to a different direction. But I want to ask you about this moment I saw on social media that SDPB's China Locket was able to record. And it's you singing to the Holocaust survivor. And I apologize, I've forgotten her name, so you'll have to remind me what that is. Can you tell me the significance of that from your perspective?
Yeah, Renee Firestone.
Thank you.
Is the Holocaust survivor. You know, that definitely wasn't anything that was planned when we heard her conversation and her sharing her story with us. It reminded me of possibly listening to one of my grandmothers who survived through the Dakota 38 or the Wounded Knee Massacre, and how significant that would be for people in our state to hear that. And you know, and so at the end, one of our elders on the trip asked if I would sing a Dakota honor song for her. And I thought, how appropriate, in that we have that connection of historically our ancestors, and in her case, she's lived through some horrific times. However, in our way of life as Dakota people, the answers rely in our prayer, in our recognizing each other, not as humans or not as somebody that's better or less than, but rather that recognizing each other's souls, that we're spiritual beings. And that's one of the reasons why we have Dakota names, is because our ancestors utilize that as a way to for our identity. And so we had that connection, and I thought, you know, this was a perfect time to sing an honor song for a woman that survived through such horrific times. But her message is to, no matter what you go through, to stand up and to take pride in who you are. Remember your ancestors, remember your relatives. However, utilize the fact that you're still here. There's a reason why she was still here, and the reason why Creator allowed her to live through that. And it's the same thing with many of our people. We're all here for a reason. And so these honor songs are sung to help recognize that process of maybe difficult times that you have overcome to do something positive with your life. And so that she was very you know, deserving of that particular moment. And there wasn't a dry eye in the room,
right.
But at the same time, you know, it was an honor to be able to do that.
We need to wrap up our time for today, so I would like to offer each of you a little bit to just say one final thing, and I hope this is just one of many conversations that we'll have this year and beyond. Karen, would you like to start? What final thoughts here moving forward?
I first would like to thank Bev, Eric, and Whitney for joining us today. They're incredible leaders in the community and in this group. So thank you to all three of you. And I thank you, Lori, for the opportunity to be able to share some of our thinking. It's still very, very fresh for us, and I think it will continue to be fresh. I have a tear in my eye this morning just listening to my colleagues, and I am hopeful we're going to be getting a large group together in about a month that will be really wonderful for us to share. So we'll be anxious to talk to you again. Again, so many thanks.
Eric, your final thoughts, and until next time, until we meet again.
Yeah, Eric Brings White, if you're listening, I texted you. It's Thai food next. And Whitney, I just want to say, Whitney, I've told you this before. Whitney will sing at the drop of the hat. And just to see that courage, we'll be in a crowd of hundreds of people, and someone will turn to Whitney and say, Whitney, can you pray for us here? Whitney, can you sing for us here? And he humbly says, yep, I can do that. And then just busts out with this powerful Lakota song that is so moving. And to see the courage inside of Whitney, it's always cool. So well done, Whitney.
Thank you, Eric.
Whitney, is there an appropriate song for this moment, or would you like to end with words?
You know, I think the song that comes to mind is the song by the Porcupine Singers. and they're a world-renowned drum group from the Oglala Lakota country, and became friends and relatives in the Powwow Trail with my grandfather and myself. And there's a song that they sing that talks about stand up, no matter, as Dakota, ways are difficult. Sometimes this life is difficult, but stand up. And they, the song is, Najio Lakota Pete Hikelo Hai. Najio Lakota Pete Hikelo Hai. Najio Lakota Pete Hikelo Hai. And these songs, they really bring the spirit back to our people. And I always love to sing, because that's one of the gifts that my grandfather gave to me. And when we hear these songs at our gatherings, they're a message, and they bring strength and they uplift our spirits. And so I'm very grateful for this opportunity to share a little bit. And it's an honor to be here with everyone here, and especially, China, for her to be on this trip and to be able to connect us with that. I think that was very important. So yeah. Thank you, China.
SDPB's China Lockett. Whitney, thank you so much for that. Eric Dwyer, thank you for sort of setting me up to ask that question. Mm-hmm. And Bev Warren, let's end with you and your final thoughts until we meet again.
At my workplace here in Rapid City, South Dakota State University College of Nursing, we have a theme for our program, and it's by one of our ancestors, Sitting Bull, when he said back in the late 1800s, "Let us put our minds together and see what life we can make for our children." And that still resonates with me whenever I connect with students and remind them, remember, we're not doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for our future. And so we'll continue that and expand it throughout the city of Rapid City and make this a wonderful place to be for all of us.
Until we meet again, Karen Mortimer, Bev Warren, Eric Dwyer, Whitney Rencounter, thank you so much. Mini Luzahan, Okola Kichiapi, ambassadors with us from SDPB's Black Hills Bureau. Thank you. See you next time.
Thank you,
Lori.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks as well to our friends at the Black Hills Surgical Hospital Studio for helping us bring you conversations from the Black Hills.